Happy to be here today. What a beautiful day outside. It's cloudy. Well, I think a little cool, and it's July. We're really lucking out so far this summer. I'm going to talk about two things. The first thing I'm going to talk about is present moment. And what the hell is that? And the second thing is meditation. So let's start off with, what is the present moment? I went online, I was reading a lot of stuff about it, and nobody really had a definitive answer for it. So I feel comfortable in sharing my answer. And I like to think of the present moment as being a film. And in that film you have frames, and when all the frames are moving at a certain speed, it comes alive. It becomes a story. People end up doing stuff and saying stuff. And at the end of the film, you either feel satisfied or dissatisfied, happy you were there, unhappy you were there. It all depends. So, in meditation, we have two ways of doing it. We have mindfulness meditation, oftentimes called vipassana or insight, and we have tranquility meditation, often called bliss and happiness. That's my favorite meditation because I live downtown. I need to balance all the suffering with bliss and happiness. But I'm going to talk about mindfulness today. Because mindfulness is at UCLA, everybody's doing it. It's become a medical aspect now to bring you to the present moment experience of your life, where you get to learn all sorts of stuff. In the Buddhist tradition, mindfulness can be practiced on four things. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of sensations, mindfulness of the mind, and mindfulness of mental objects. So think about it this way, that you've got this film and you want to focus in on a frame, not the film itself. And so you sit quietly, you bring your attention to the tip of your nose, feel the sensation of breath going out, coming in, going out, coming in. And what's cool about the sensation of breath is it's always happening right now. It's not happening yesterday, though something similar happened yesterday. It's not happening tomorrow. We pray it will be. But right now we have the sensation, and it's taking us to the present moment experience of our life. And we're slowing down the film. We're not going to stop the film. Sometimes in meditation they say, stop all thinking. Well, you can't do that. You can create conditions necessary for it to happen, but you can't stop the thinking because you are the thinking. So here we are, and now we're slowing down the film. And rather than stopping the film, we now have it working in slow motion. And we get to see stuff in a different way. And we get to see stuff without the critique of the ego or personality. It's just sort of this raw awareness of what's going on right now. So let's take, for instance, one of the meditation techniques in mindfulness of the body. It's simple. It's being aware of what position your body is in right now in this present moment. Are you sitting? Are you kneeling? Are you lying? Are you walking? Are you standing? It's just as simple as that. Noting, I'm sitting. And you let it go. Noting, I'm sitting, and you let it go. Now we come to sensations. And one of the techniques in sensations is just being aware of the sensations in your body right now in the present moment. And one of the techniques is to scan your body from the top of your head to the tip of your toes, up and down, looking for sensations. And I can remember when I started to meditate back in 1979, the only sensation I was aware of was the suffering I was feeling by sitting on the floor in a cold zendo. I didn't have one happy, pleasant sensation. They were all negative. And I thought to myself, is this what meditation is all about? It's just to sit here and suffer? And then I remember what the Buddha said. The Buddha said, I only teach two things. I teach why we're suffering, and more importantly, I teach how to end that suffering. So I continued to suffer in my meditation. And sometimes I suffered less, and sometimes I suffered more, but the suffering didn't seem to go away for a really long time, until I realized that I needed to come to a place of acceptance with the way things were. I didn't want that suffering. I was resisting. I was trying to push it away. Could I embrace it? Could I accept it? Could I just be with it and realize it was just one of the many sensations I felt in my life? It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was simply a sensation. I labeled that sensation pain. It was negative. When I have a pleasant sensation, I label it happiness, or good, or I want to do it again. I have some labels for all these things I'm feeling, and that's the ego getting involved because it wants to keep me alive. That's its job. So far, so good. But one day, it will fail. And so will I. And at that point, will I be able to accept what's going on as just being normal, or just being a sensation, or just being me? I don't know. I'll find out, though. So here we have sensations, and we have three kinds of sensations, the Buddha said. The Buddha said we have pleasant sensations, we had unpleasant sensations, and we have neutral sensations. And most of the time, we're not aware of the neutral sensations. They don't catch our attention, so we're aware of pleasant and unpleasant. And we're scanning, we find a sensation, pleasant, unpleasant, that's all we say. We don't go get involved with it, we don't analyze it. Pleasant, unpleasant. Let it go and keep scanning. Another sensation. Pleasant, unpleasant. Let it go, keep scanning. So at the end of maybe 20 minutes of scanning and finding all these sensations in your body, then you go into a deep state of reflection, rumination, and you start to think to yourself, okay, what did I notice about that? Could I pick out the three aspects of existence, according to Buddhism? The three aspects of existence. Number one, everything's always changing. Man, that is so depressing. Because just when you put all the stuff together and it turns out to be exactly what you want, it goes away. Changes into something else. You know, I take care of cats. We have two little litters now. We have some new residents. Oh, they're so cute. They're wonderful. But I realize in a couple years, they'll be middle-aged. Okay, but not as cute as the kittens. And then in a few more years, they'll be old age. And then the problems start. Because there's that resistance. We like fun and young and youthful, and we don't necessarily like the other side of it. And yet, that's our best practice. I don't know how you feel about old people, But every time I look in the mirror, that's all I see. And I say to myself, I'm going to be kind to myself today, because I'm old. And nobody else is going to be kind to me, because I'm old. And every time I go to Vaughn's, it plays out exactly that way. So I see this impermanence as being good when bad stuff is going on, but bad when good stuff is going on. And the more I try to hold on and grasp and cling to the good stuff, I suffer. I suffer. And the less I try to cling and hold and grasp, I suffer less. And if I come to a place of an open hand, letting life come in and go out without any kind of response or reaction, I hardly suffer at all. Because I'm not into controlling the universe. I can't even control myself. If I could, I wouldn't get up three times at the night to relieve myself. When I was younger, that was not a problem. So here I am, stuck with the idea of control. Can I control my life? Can I control my car? Can I control the cats? The cats, never. The car, maybe. Myself, I think so. I sometimes feel in control, but then other stuff happens. So the first aspect of existence that I became aware of as being truth was that all things are in a constant change, a state of change and flux. They're always turning into something else. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. Second aspect of truth, of existence, according to Buddhism. This one doesn't go over well. It's always unsatisfactory. It's always flirting with suffering, dis-ease, and discontent. It's never the way it's supposed to be. And that causes me to suffer. And it started long, long ago when our ego arose from infinite space. You know, when we were first born, literally, there was no ego. We were connected to the universe in a very personal and intimate way. And then all of a sudden, we started to become aware of hand and foot and knee. We didn't have those words, but we did have the form. And then one day, something happened that changed our whole life forever. Mom showed up. We didn't know that mom was not the universe, because the universe would take care of us when we felt uncomfortable. When we were hungry, it would feed us. The universe was just amazing. And then for some reason, the universe disappeared and mom showed up. And now there were two of us in the entire world. Wow, how cool was that? And then this other person, dad, showed up. And then we might have a sister or a brother, became aware of those. And we became further and further away from that connection with the universe. We started to become lonely, fearful, because we weren't being cradled by the ultimate reality. We had to separate from that so we could have a life, so we could prosper and exist. We needed to defend ourselves. We needed to define ourselves. And the more we learned, the less we felt connected. And then, for some reason, mom decided to take us to kindergarten with a bunch of strangers. And we had to start to learn stuff, like little lines on a piece of paper that turned into words that turned into paragraphs, that turned into meaning. Kindergarten taught us how to hallucinate. It's true. Every time you read that sentence or paragraph, you're tripping out, man. You can see it. You can hear it. You can hear the people talking because of those lines on that piece of paper. You can see color. You can see good and bad. And you can see the final ending of the story. But then another story, and another story. And then eventually, we become the story. It's all about us. It's me. I'm here. And it's so cool to be me. And then we go to grade school and high school, and we realize that we're around a bunch of other me's. They all think they exist in the same way I think I exist. And some of them have similar ideas, and some of them don't. How am I going to accept those? And then there's the team sports. There's no I in team. So now we have to learn to work with others. Gosh, that's so difficult. I like archery. It's just me and a bow. But if you're football or basketball, man, you got a lot of other people to worry about. And they're going to be worrying about you as well. Is he doing a good job? Should we get the alternative in here? What should we do? So the idea that life is ultimately unsatisfactory threw me for a loop at the age of 28 when I read that for the first time. Because I always thought life was great. Look at all the possibilities. Look at all the things I could be doing. And more importantly, look at all the things I could have. I could start owning things now, making them mine, controlling them. Princess Di, dress, like $400,000, $200,000. Sold at auction. Come on, it was a dress. No. It wasn't a dress. It was a dress with a story. And the story was worth $200,000. They just sold a purse for $4 million. And a model used to have it, or something like that. I forget what her name is. She's no longer with us, but her purse still exists. And somebody wanted it. $4 million. So we're stuck in the story. It's our story, it's a collective story, but we're stuck. And meditation is designed to allow you to put the storybook down for a while and come to a direct experience without the words, without the stories, without the pictures. And that can freak you out because it's not what you think it is. And then the third level of truth, reality, existence, according to Buddhism, it's called not self. Now, I got to explain this because it doesn't make any sense. It made no sense to me when I first heard it. I'm thinking, what the heck are they talking about? I know who I am. I exist. I have a story. And it's a good one. It's my favorite story because it's a story about me. No, I'm sorry, you don't exist in the way you think you do. But what is this not self? We could change it to not the same self. That every moment of every day, we're becoming somebody else. Now, it's a gradual process. You don't notice it in an hour or a day or a week. We still pretty much look and think just like we did a week ago. But how about given a couple years? Who was that guy that was a teenager? I don't know. Who was that guy that was in his 20s? I don't know. Who was the 50-year-old who thought he was still young? I don't know. At the current age, I'd say 50 is young. And it was a wonderful time. I became aware recently of a lot of online stuff about who the stars and celebrities used to look like. They used to look like this, and now they look like this. And I can hardly wait to see how they look now, because I remember how they looked then. And sometimes I'm aghast. Sometimes it's horrific. Sometimes they did pretty good. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, that is a blessing for them not to look like they did at 20 or 30. And you know why I think that's a blessing? Because now they can have a life. Nobody knows who the hell they are. There's no paparazzi. There's no, can I have your signature, your autograph? They're just like at, you know, a supermarket buying lettuce and avocados. You pay no attention to them at all. They finally got their life back. Most of us have had a life our whole life. But those poor people sold out for fame and fortune. And the burden of being somebody was a lot to carry. And now they become nobody. And now they're free. They're free. So I don't feel sad anymore. For me, I look at that and go, that's wonderful. I'm glad you look like that. You know, David Bowie said, when we get old, we finally get the face we should have had. And when I look in the mirror, I go, damn, I was supposed to have this face. What can you do? So as we mature, as we evolve as a human being, we keep becoming all these different people. We keep changing. We too are impermanent. One of the reasons we suffer so much is because of impermanence. One of the reasons we look like this is because of impermanence. So what a wonderful insight to have in your life, to look at the world and see all the impermanence, to see the flow, to see the dance, as Ram Dass might say, the dance of life. It's always moving, always changing, always evolving, always flowing. It's the big river. And here we are, and we finally became aware of it, and what's the payoff? For all the meditation, for the insight gained from seeing those three aspects of existence, what's the payoff? I think the payoff is acceptance. We can finally come to a place of acceptance with our life. We don't have to be anybody anymore. In fact, the older we get, the less we are. People say, aren't you sort of nervous about forgetting and not knowing? I am so happy not to know. After a while, you don't want to know. You just want to let it happen and go on and get a cup of coffee. I don't care. But don't you want to be somebody? Well, I never was. I probably never will be. So just let me be ignorant of who I'm supposed to be. Let me just get up in the morning, get my coffee, post on Facebook, feed the cats, take a shower, look at the world and say, my, another day. How lucky am I? What are you going to do today? I have no idea. But I don't care, because the world will tell me what to do. It will suggest I do this or that, because, for instance, I'm hungry, so the universe suggests that you should eat. But what should I eat? Then you realize there's a sale at McDonald's, and go, I got it now. And then you wish you hadn't realized that. But the world is stimulating us all the time, pushing us, prodding us in a certain direction. And most of the time, it's the direction that's probably most beneficial. Sometimes it's not, and that's where personal choice comes in. We get to choose. Who do I want to be today? Do I want to be victor or victim? Do I want to talk or silent? Who do I want to be today? Now, every day, when I feed the cats, I wear the same pants, the same shirt, and the same hat. And people say, well, why would you do that? What a stupid thing to do. I said, oh no, that's how they recognize me. There's Kusla. He looked like that yesterday. That means we're going to eat. Yay, Kusla. But most of us will change our clothes and put different things on and wear a hat or fix our hair so we look different. We don't want to be the same because there's nothing to be. We want to be today. Who am I today? Not the same self I was yesterday. Who will I be tomorrow? I have no idea. Will I be better or worse? I have no idea. Don't you care? No, I don't. Because being better or worse is subjective. We should always try to be kind. But kindness may not be looked as being better. It may be looked at as being sort of, I don't know, he's too nice. Look, he gave a dollar to that guy. That guy did not deserve a dollar. What's he going to do with it? I bet he's not going to spend it wisely. I bet he's going to spend it on something that's really stupid. And he gave the dollar anyway. What's wrong with him? My job was to give the dollar. After that, it's out of my control. You do what you want to. My job was to give you the dollar. But Kusla, how do you practice giving away money and not having any connection to it? How do you do that? I'll give you my secret. I started a long time ago. Vending machines, my friends. Vending machines. Leave the change behind, and somebody will find that change, that 35 cents that you didn't take with you, and they will say, hey, this is my day. I found 35 cents. What a wonderful thing. You've changed a life for 35 cents. So, meditation, coming to the present moment. Meditation, observing in a selfless way what the heck is going on. Meditation, resolving the issue of being you. Being you is tough. It's not easy. And you've done it your whole life. And you're still doing it. Congratulations. But it's not easy. So it's a place where we can come to acceptance, and more importantly, a place of peace. 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 Not happiness. Buddhism doesn't talk about happiness because it's so fleeting. Buddhism talks about peace. And peace seems to happen when you have profound acceptance of the way things are. I want to thank you for listening and sharing your time with me today. Have a wonderful Sunday.